Thank Neo, Paul, and Greg for agreeing to be a part of this. Panels like this and topics like this can be a bit challenging, as Ken sort of mentioned earlier. I think whenever we talk about issues of identity, it can bring up strong feelings for us. And so I just want to ask everyone to listen with grace and contribute with grace as well, because there will be a brief opportunity for you guys to participate. So now that Greg's back, we'll make a start. And the first question for the panel is, what was it like for you growing up as a man?
Best.
It was very easy. Looking, I didn't know it at the time, but it was comfortable, it was privileged. I was oblivious to gender issues. I think most of my life I've considered myself gender blind, but I've come to think that that means different things now to what I used to. But I never saw any, gender issues, whether it was, domestic violence or I guess I was aware that there were bad things that men did and bad things that women experienced and vice versa and so forth, but it was never close to home. It was never strong in my thoughts, and I never sought out to treat boys, girls, men, women differently. So it just wasn't a topic I thought about.
Oblivious is definitely a word I would use. I grew up in a house of pretty much all boys and one woman. So it was a bit, lopsided, I guess. I remember at school, the kind of, girl-boy teasing, I guess you could call it. But apart from that, it was, comfortable. Definitely wasn't aware of the things I am now.
For me, growing up as a man was it kind of splits around the time I was 18, and there were a couple of things that happened then. So 18 was the time up until I lived in Whyalla in South Australia, and it was also around 18 that I came to faith and moved to Western Australia. So it's hard for me to tease out the causal factors, but I'm aware that my views about what it meant to be a man were formed really, really early. And my reflection back on that is that I spent my first 18 years learning from my peers what it meant to be a man, and then the rest of the time trying to undo that. Whyalla, it's a caricature because it fits all of the stereotypes of the horrible, awful, misogynistic attitudes that men had towards women, and all of them. You're nodding in agreement because you've spent some time in Whyalla. So it's no news for you. The whole thing of objectifying women, of turning them into conquests that you can then share with your mates in the high school kind of playgrounds or whatever, that's what we did. It was shocking. I think most of that training came from my peers rather than from my folks in my case, because my folks went to church, but for my peers who went to school, I think there was just a continuous, seamless, this is how you treat women. Post 18, I've spent a huge amount of time trying to identify just how damaging that that upbringing was to me and how hard it is to undo it. It's taken a long time. And women have not always been helpful in me trying to tackle that damage, because quite rightly women have found their voice over the years and have named the things that need to be addressed. And what I've found is that it's almost become unsafe for me to name the things that I'm ashamed of, that I want to escape from. So it's a bit of a quandary in that I share in the struggle to identify those negative things that men have done that we absolutely need to address. And I'm so encouraged by the voice that women have found through the Me Too movement, but I find myself isolated and stranded in that discussion. Or maybe that's my perception, and maybe it's not that bad, and maybe I just need to get out more.
So. Do you want to hold that?
Yeah, sure.
Thanks for that. So it sounds like some of the experiences range from kind of an obliviousness.
Yeah, can I actually add? I was just, from what you were saying, Paul, I think for me around that age was a turning point for me as well, for nothing like the size of change. I went to uni and experienced a whole new set of different people and began a journey of learning a whole lot more about the topic, or many topics. And because I didn't have that experience of starkly bad role models and stereotypes and so forth, but there were still some quite genteel, polite, bad structures that I think still need unpicking. I think it's been a much slower, more gradual process of change for me.
Yeah, did you have any comment to make about that?
Yeah. I've found that the stereotypical male objectifying women sort of attitude has not only been in school, but has continued on into my workplace. A lot of my colleagues are very childish in this sort of subject, and it's a bit difficult to deal with. But
can I just ask, Neo, I don't know much about your work, but do you work in a very male-dominated workplace?
Yeah, so right. Maker, so
okay.
I work with a lot of tradies.
Yep.
So it's that kind of, you know, the childish sort of objectifying women behaviour.
Okay. Thank you for that. I think, Paul, you've kind of touched on some of this, but did you? Oh, you've got the microphone there. But how do you think being a man has changed since you were younger? And noting that you are the youngest person on this group, you might want to try and reflect on that. Might not be a long period of time for you.
Yeah, so this feminism thing has been a very recent thing, in my opinion. So I think definitely in the last, you know, few years, 10 years, that women have definitely found their voice and have started to kick back into, you know, put in their two cents of what needs to happen. Yeah, when I was younger, I was pretty oblivious to what was going on. But now it's definitely had a bit of a kickback.
Oh, I think there's a huge amount that's changed, but one in particular that I think has changed is the assumption that men have had that they get a free ride in certain areas. You know, the change in assumption that men would be the breadwinner and women would be the homekeeper or find part-time work. I just find that's just one example of many assumptions which men have just are now finding that they can't just defend or just assume that everyone's going to agree that. And partly that's because the gender discussion is actually, I see, as part of a wider discussion about minorities. What is a minority? And in many ways, the gender discussion is a discussion of minorities because of a whole range of factors. But what we're finding is that there are a lot of people who are isolated by whatever circumstance of life they find themselves in, whether they're a female working in a male-dominated working place, whether they're a migrant working in a really blokey, racially charged environment. So I'm just seeing that's kind of one of the areas. But yeah, just the assumption that because you're a man, here's an example, you're in your office and the men get to speak up first. They do all the talking, they do all the mansplaining, and then if you're lucky, if there are women in there, and I've seen this so many times in my organisation, they will often defer, well, in the past, they will wait till last, whereas these days I find that doesn't happen so much, and the men are kind of, whoa, what's happening here? I thought I had the microphone. So that's changing.
It seems to me the change is patchy. So I work in IT, and there's lots and lots of men around, and the those assumptions that Paul's talking about, that they've all changed. So I think it's now you always have to assume that using professional language includes being gender inclusive and so forth, but when you're organising a group of guys to go out for lunch, there I use the word guys, it's three or four men who know each other, and there's one woman who doesn't really feel very comfortable with the rest of the group, who may or may not come, and if she comes, then she sits quietly at one end of the table. And so there's cultural change there within these professional policy changes, and both of which has to come. And then in a different setting, my experience of parenting and schooling and so forth, early on I would be that odd guy who worked 4 days a week, and people would remark about that and say how amazingly lucky I was, and I thought I was just clever and smug and I could organise it. But now I look back and think, well, I was privileged and lucky and happened to have a job where I could do that, and I really was lucky. But now, as to the question of how things have changed in the 5 or so years we've been involved in schooling, I'm not strange anymore. I'm not different anymore. There's lots of men around. There's men working part-time. There's men who have essentially retired to be full-time parents. And that's in our little microcosm. And that, I suppose, is a marker for the wider culture within.
That's all I've got there.
I'll just pick up on one of your statements there. Do you see that change where more men are working part-time and possibly more involved in parenting as a positive change?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've... I sometimes see somebody doing some form of single parenting and it looks ridiculously hard. And there's a version of that in, I think there's a version of that in households where man goes off to work, comes home really tired, goes to bed, expects dinner, etc. And woman does everything else. And mixing that up where there's shared responsibility, shared emotional support for each other and for the kids, it is so much better than than trying to do parts of it solo. And you know, again, we're lucky. We can do bits and pieces of part-time, and we've got extra community as well, believing in it takes a village to raise a child. Start with two and add all the extra people around. So yes, short answer, yes.
Thinking then about those changes, if you could talk to your younger selves, what advice would you give that person about being a man? And Greg will start with you.
Okay. I think I was pretty obnoxious in my 20s. And I'd like to say to me, there's often or almost always more going on in a situation. There's more layers beneath a situation than you can imagine. And don't assume that you can ever be aware of them all. So tread lightly. And allow other people to be right, even though it seems completely wrong. At the same time, taking courage, because as a white, straight, cisgender, Protestant, middle class male, you have power and you can use it for good, even if your personality isn't particularly a charismatic leader or whatever, there's still power to be had and used for good.
Good observation. Neo, what changes would you sort of, or what advice would you give your younger self?
Yeah, so my younger self wasn't all that long ago. But I definitely noticed a lot of stuff going on at school where the guys wouldn't treat the girls with the same respect that they would other guys, and I didn't really have the courage to stand up for them or for myself, so because I was very worried about what people would think of me. I wasn't all that open about my faith as well, so definitely I would tell my younger self to worry less about what other people think or feel about me, and that way I could use a bit more courage to stand up for for the women and the girls who weren't treated the way they were supposed to in school.
That's very good advice. I wish I'd learned that lesson at your age.
I had a bit of practice at this with my two boys as they were going through high school, and I guess as part of counselling them and supporting them, I just wish someone had given me the same advice when I'd been their age. The main things that I remember when my boys were first encountering girls was the classic, falling in love, the dissolution of boundaries, all the classic psychological stuff that you learn about. And one of the key messages was, you're going into your... if they had some kind of difficulty, some kind of emotional difficulty with the girl that they were with, often it would be about whose needs were being met. And often I remember sitting down with Andrew and David, and their mindset was about not always. Now they were better than that, but it was part of their peer group of what do I get out of this? What do I need to do so that I'm comfortable in this relationship, and maybe that's an unfair characterization, but what it reminded me was the objectification that I went through as a younger child, which was, here is a person, what can I get out of this person to fulfill whatever emotional needs that I have? And I remember many times sitting down with them and saying, don't think about yourself in this relationship. If you're going to be in this relationship, what are you going to do that makes your partner a better person, whatever that looks like? What needs do they have that you can help make them the best person that they can be? And I mean, it might sound cliched these days, but at the time that was a radically different approach to how boys approach girls, which was about getting your personal needs met, sexual conquest, all of those things. So I just tried to turn it around to, it's not about you. If you want to be in a relationship and you want that relationship to be resilient and to survive, what can you do to make that your partner now a better person? So that it's not about objectifying them and create and making them something apart from yourself that you then manipulate. It's about you engaging with that person and making them something, or helping. So it's not about yourself anymore. That's what I would have liked to have heard. Having said that, I'm not sure I would have listened.
Good point.
Because of the enculturation that I'd had at that age, which was that you gained brownie points in the face of your colleagues by the amount of conquests that you had on the field. So it would have been interesting to see whether I listened.
Thank you. We've kind of touched on a lot of the next question, which was around the changes that have occurred for women and the impacts on your views and experiences of being a man. So we might jump to, unless there's anything burning that you would like to add at this point, but we might jump to a couple of questions that I'd like to get your take on first as a panel, and then maybe throw open to the congregation as well. And this is kind of a big question, but how do you think that men can improve the relationships they have with women and people of other genders, and going beyond what you've already sort of highlighted? And Greg, maybe we start with you.
Can we come back to me?
Okay. Paul, are you okay to start?
Learning to listen. One of the things that I've marvelled about in the particularly in the Me Too movement is, and other similar initiatives that women have taken, is that I'm amazed how often I'm oblivious to things that I do that really piss women off, and I thought that I understood and knew the issues, and what I'm finding is that actually I'm just scratching the surface. I haven't got a clue how women are feeling or responding to things that I do that I think are cool but that really annoy them. So one of the things that I've been working on is learning to listen better, to see, hang on, what are they saying that I wasn't aware of that I need to pay attention to?
Thank you. Neo.
Definitely, we can listen a lot more. I think also asking questions can be helpful, especially with people of other genders, because sometimes we don't really know. Just being a lot more caring and considerate in terms of the way we speak to them.
Thank you.
Thinking about that notion of responsibility to figure out helpful approach or response. Thinking back on, I've always considered myself gender blind, and actually now trying to unlearn that, is that the word? Taking the view that as the person in that conceptual majority, it's actually my responsibility to try and learn some of those things that I do that are not helpful, or that women experience that are not helpful. It's not, so to speak, it's not the oppressed's job to educate the oppressor, to simplify the language a bit too much. Also thinking about that notion of assuming that there's more layers beneath a situation than I will know about, but also not expecting to have to get down to them to have a conversation, or to listen well, or to be humble around others, and learning about each individual situation and woman and person as a person, not as, you know, necessarily as a member of a, you know, representative of a gender, and not looking for stereotypes, I suppose.
Thank you very much for that. There's a lot of stuff in that. Would anyone in the congregation like to add in response to their own thoughts about that question, which, just to remind you, is how do you think that men can improve their relationships with women and other people of other gender?
Yeah, I was just reflecting on my role as a parent. Obviously, Neo and I had a conversation about what he was going to talk about, and what really struck me was how much things have changed in a generation in terms of how people get their attitudes. And I think my generation and before had a lot more control of the kind of attitudes that our kids were exposed to. So, I was exposed to as a child, is what I mean. So, you know, if you didn't like the attitudes of the sporting club, you just pulled your kid out, or the school, or, you know, I don't like that friend and the sort of the way that they speak to their sister, I'm not going to let you play with them anymore. You could really have a lot of control. You could take them to church. You could do whatever. Whereas when I was asking Neo about where does he get his information and, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know, he's talking about YouTube. He's talking about social media stuff that I can, you know, I might, you know, as an adult, up until now, obviously, he does his own thing, really. But as a child, I might control where he goes and who he associates with. But I'm largely unable to control his access to outside information and outside attitudes. And, you know, and that's something I think that the previous generation just didn't have to deal with. And that I just was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, like even when we have strong moral views and strong sort of social justice issue, you know, perspectives, our kids can actually be getting access frequently to lots of alternate views that wasn't an issue previously.
So to just turn that around, is that about encouraging them to experience social media through a woman's perspective, you know, by going to social media sites that are actually dealing with some of this stuff?
Okay. I'm not necessarily posing a solution to that. I'm just saying that, you know, often this generation of children and young people are getting access to a lot of things that we wouldn't, that are unhelpful, maybe without us realising.
Sure. I just don't know. I don't know how much useful I have to say. Look, there's a lady at work. I work for the CSIRO is my employer, so there's a lot of people across the country on a online chat forum, and one of the ladies created a channel called Gender Diversity,
where, I'm not sure what you want me to say about it, but it's a place where people post information online, occasional tweets or Facebook threads or whatnot, where we can then go on to discuss gender-related issues. I guess it's intentionally trying to be a safe space to discuss these things. Actually refer to, I suppose, in that question of from a woman's perspective. So a woman will post an article and then we'll all go off and read it or watch the video or whatever, and there might be a little conversation. So I suppose that's an attempt at tackling that issue of how do we bridge this Wild West internet? There's so much material out there. And I've actually, in some ways, intentionally sought out different people on my Twitter feed to try and learn about what others are around the world are experiencing, because I just have no idea. And I'm fairly well connected online.
Yeah, I'm not convinced by that discussion. I tend to see social media as an amplifier of views that you already hold, where people self-select. I think a lot of those views are formed much, much earlier, and that people use the internet to amplify what they want. So, I don't know, just put that out there. I don't think parents have ever had much control other than to be unwittingly passing on the memes and the bad attitudes that we've always had.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would have loved to have had YouTube and everything like that when I was younger. My parents tried very hard to control, and they controlled me in a way that meant I couldn't be me. So to have access to other views and opinions would have been wonderful. And so I envy, in fact, the variety that is out there. And I don't think it has to be all bad. And I think young people are better, I think, than our generation is at seeking more variety. So I kind of, when I look on posts, it's not younger people making nasty posts on Facebook and things. It's the older people. I just find their posts more generous and more open to a variety of opinions. So I don't see those things as necessarily bad things.
I want to take it away from the social media place and talk about how we become good men. And that's starting from the place, I want to end there, but I want to start by sharing my shock and insight today is hearing your two first answers, not criticism, about you were oblivious. Because I have a different experience of growing up as a man. Within the home context, it was wonderful. But beyond that, I found it incredibly difficult. Because in my church setting, there were noticeably patriarchal kind of stuff that disturbed me greatly. But the epitome I want to share with you is my schooling education was a private schools, only boys' schools. And I played rugby through university with these Neanderthal, particularly medical and law men. But I'll give you my experience. So I grew up as a thoughtful, reflective, more feminine man, always spiritually engaged, and being genuinely religious at a Church of England boys' school is not a good thing to grow up as. And I can remember the pain, year 11 and 12, of arriving at school on Monday morning in the boys' common room, where the tenor of the conversation was about, what parties have we been to? How drunk have we got? And how far have we got with what girls? And I just always thought that was a terribly silly, immature kind of conversation and deeply disturbing. So I just want to give you... So for me, and then if I jump forward into professional life, into patriarchal organisations, where it's all about being alpha male, then that, to me, I felt marginalised as well. Now, that is in no way to equate my marginalisation with the journey of women, because I affirm that. But that's that's the struggle. That's been my struggle in that way too.
What did you do, Michael, when you thought it was immature? Did you stay quiet?
Well, again, I relate to what Neo said. There were times when I was courageous and self-righteous about it. There were the times when I stayed silent, etc., etc. So that was the journey. But the journey was to find alternative places where I could connect in my faith community, men's groups, etc., etc. And I married a good woman who wouldn't take any shit. So it's a long journey, but it's an alternative experience.
Yeah, I sort of had a bit of a shock, Neo, when you said that your perception was that women were starting to find their voice in the last 10 years. Because I'm old enough to remember that when I joined the bank in 1968, the ledger machinist and I were the two lowest people in the branch, paid people in the branch, because we were women. And we got equal pay in 1969, before a lot of other people did, because our work was deemed to be equal to that work done by men. And the men used to tell me that when I got equal pay, I'd have to carry the strong boxes with all the money into the strong room, because if you got equal pay, you had to be as strong as they were. But a lot's changed in that time. And I mean, if the people who the women's movement in the 70s had seen what things were like today, and some of us are still alive enough to know, they would have been disappointed, because like the union movement, it's amazing what we've lost as well as what we've gained. And with regard to the Anglican school, Michael, Nick gave up on a lot of his friends from Perth Modern because he got fed up of going to parties and them all getting blotto. So in that sense, not much has changed, whether you're in a public school or a private school. There's still, and of course now the big issue is women, not just men, but women, girls getting blotto too. So I would say beyond that, that often women are their own worst enemies as well.
I've got one here, and we're down to the last two, so I'm not going to hold on to the time. We'll continue the conversation.
Just reflecting, Paul, obviously growing up in Wyala is an educational experience in itself. I think we're kidding ourselves if the experience that we have as a community is reflective of society as a whole. Neo, I think where you come from, your workplace is a classic example of a whole tranche of society that does not move with where we are and where we are moving, that there is layers and a large mass of people who are not moving at the same pace or in the same direction. So I think to answer the direct question that we're meant to be answering is, for a start, we don't assume, dropping the assumptions, engaging on an individual rather than a anything else, but I think definitely we are kidding ourselves. And a bunch of us work in workplaces where it's visible. A lot of us don't. I think in the professional workplace we can see these movements. I think in a lot of other workplaces, these divisions are very present and are continuing to grow.
Yeah, I hope this can sort of pull together and summarise a bit of what's going on, and it picks up on things that Paul said and others. And we're really living in these two multiple universes of time and development, social development, and it goes all the way back to the Apostle Paul saying, why do I do the thing I don't want to do? Why don't I do the thing I want to do? And the key thing is the difference between intellectual assent to a set of values and the conditioning you carry with you from your childhood and from your mother. And when the pressure's on, you revert to the conditioning. So when the pressure's on, I expect my wife to look after me like my mother did, even though I'm married to Karen. I have particular expertise at this because I'm 16 years older than her, and I grew up in a completely different era. So we've had to be very conscious about understanding what our personal values are and what we can, and make sure that we mean what we say and ask the question again. As Christians, then, it does come back to Paul's question, Paul the Apostle, and it comes back to us being kind to each other and realising that what a man does, not necessarily what he gives assent to. That he may be struggling just as much with wanting to change as you are with wanting him to change. And that's true of everybody, really, because society has this huge imbalance between what we all agree is right and what we do.
Maybe it might be conclusion of all these things, and I just simply say thanks to Paul to listen to me when I came to this church last December, and he was really good to listen to my problem. I cried out and poured out my problem, and he listened to me. Wonderful person. Thank you very much.